He stared at the photo for a long moment and swallowed, before again turning it to face me. It was a full-length photo taken the night I went to a wedding with Baldwin. It was, without a doubt, the best I'd ever looked in a photo. I'd had my hair and makeup professionally done, and the dress I wore fit me like a glove. It was simple, black and sleeveless, with a daring low-cut V that showed off my cleavage and curves. The dress was more risque than I would normally wear, and I'd been feeling confident and pretty. Although that lasted only about 15 minutes after Baldwin took that photo, right up until I answered the door to his apartment and realized he was bringing a date to the wedding we'd both been invited to. And that date wasn't me. Remembering the sadness I'd felt that night, I said, "Wedding." Drew nodded and stared at the photo again before looking back up to me.
"You look gorgeous. Sexy as hell."
I felt the blush creep up my face. I hated having fair skin for this exact reason. "Thank you." He swiped a few more times and turned the cell back to me.
"Boyfriend."
That one had been taken a few minutes after Baldwin told me how beautiful I looked and took that full-length photo of me. His arm was wrapped around my waist, and I was smiling and gazing at him as he took the selfie. His date had rung the doorbell right after that shot. The rest of the night was all forced smiles. "No."
"Ex-boyfriend."
"No." He looked down again and back up at me.
"There's a story here, isn't there?"
"How do you know?"
"Your face. The way you're looking at him."
It's pretty sad that a virtual stranger was able to see my feelings after 10 seconds of looking at a photo of us, yet Baldwin never was. I could have lied, but for some reason I didn't. We met in undergrad school. He was the TA for my psychology class while working on his doctorate. He's one of my closest friends. I actually live in the apartment next to him.
It didn't work out.
We never tried. He doesn't feel the same way about me. Drew looked like he was going to say more, but just nodded and resumed his picture snooping. By the time he was done, he really had learned a lot about me. He'd seen photos of my two little sisters, including some selfies we'd taken with the dog before I moved to New York. He knew about my feelings for Baldwin, and he was aware of how creative I could be in my need to multitask. When he slid the phone back to me on the table, I asked, "So, you said checking out each other's photos would tell us a lot about the other person. What did my photos tell you about me?"
"Family-oriented, broken-hearted, and a little bit of a nut job."
I wanted to be offended at that last part, but it was hard when he was completely on point. Although I wasn't going to admit he was right. Instead, I reached for his cell. "Password?" He smirked.
"Suck. Get out of here. You just changed yours."
He shook his head.
"Nope. It's one of my favorite words for a multitude of reasons. You suck is grumbled under my breath at people at least once a day. And of course, who doesn't love a good suck?
You're a perv,
says the woman whose password is fuck.
I made my password fuck because I could never remember what my password was, and every time I entered the wrong one, I would grumble fuck. Baldwin suggested I just make it fuck the last time I was locked out of my own phone.
Baldwin.
Our eyes caught. The guy in the photo. Drew nodded. For some reason, talking about Baldwin to Drew made me feel uncomfortable, so I changed the subject. Typing suck into his iPhone, I said, "Let's see what I learn about you, counselor." Drew clasped his hands behind his head and sat back in his chair, watching me.
"Have at it."
I found the photos icon and opened it. Seeing nothing, I went to the camera app and opened it. Nothing was there either.
"You have no photos? I thought this was an exercise to learn about each other."
"It was."
"And what exactly did I just learn about you with a camera full of nothing?"
"You learned I don't play fair."
Chapter 6. What an ass. Me. Not the shapely one I was just caught staring at. Although, what an ass. Emery had been leaning over the reception desk to reach for my ringing office phone when she caught me leering at her succulent rear end. The polite thing would have been to look away, pretend I wasn't checking her out. But what did I do? I winked. Again. What an ass. And now Emery stared at me as she continued to talk on the phone. Things went one of two ways when a woman caught you red-handed ogling her. She flirted back, or... Emery hung up the phone and walked down the hall toward me with purpose. Her face was impassive, so I wasn't sure what to expect. She stopped at the doorway and crossed her arms over her chest. "Were you just checking out my ass?" So this was heading the other way, where the object of the ogle calls you out in your shit. I mimicked her stance, folding my arms across my chest, too. "Do you want me to lie?"
"No."
"It's a great ass." Her cheeks flushed.
"You're an ass, you know that?"
"Then I must be a great ass, because it takes one to know one." Her stoic face cracked, and she laughed. I liked that she was more amused than annoyed.
"Do women tend to find your behavior attractive?"
I shrugged. "I'm handsome and rich. Women tend to find that attractive. You'd be surprised how much I can get away with."
"You are so full of yourself."
"Maybe, but it's true." I came out from where I'd been standing behind my desk, leaving only about a foot or two between us. "Tell the truth. If I was short, bald, broke, and toothless with a hump on my back, you'd have told me off after catching me looking at your ass." Her mouth opened, and she looked adorable trying to come up with a retort, even though her face had already told me I was right.
"You're an egomaniac."
"Maybe, but an attractive one." Emery rolled her eyes and huffed, but I caught a slight smirk on her face right before her hips sashayed out of my office. What an ass. The rest of the afternoon, I was tied up on the phone. Even though I'd cleared my calendar of office consults until next week, word had gotten out that I was back, and all of my miserable clients wanted to update me on their spouse's latest maneuvers. I worked in an ugly-ass business, but I was damn good at my job. Revenge was what they wanted, and every time I dealt a blow to a wife who deserved it, I mentally got even with my own ex, Alexa, all over again. I probably needed a therapist, but vicarious revenge was cheaper and far more satisfying. I just hung up with a client who wanted a restraining order to keep his estranged wife from burning his porn stash when I overheard Emery talking on the phone from the reception area. The empty office space carried her voice, and I couldn't help but listen.
"Queens, that's the closest you can get me to Midtown for under $1,500 a month? What if I went smaller? No reception area, just a simple office in a building somewhere?"
She paused for a minute.
"What's so funny? Yes, I did think you were quoting me space where more than one person can fit."
Another pause.
"No, I'm not from New York, but, you know what? Forget it. I'll call another agent."
"Trouble finding a place?" I said from behind her. Emery spun around. The look on her face was pure exasperation.
"What am I doing in New York?"
"You tell me." She sighed.
"Long story.
My office phone rang, and she held up a finger and reached for it before I could even attempt to.
"Drew Jagger's office? Who may I ask is calling?"
"Mr. London." She looked to me, and I held up two hands in the universal no way sign. She continued smoothly.
"Mr. Jagger is in with a client right now. He also has an appointment immediately following this one that is already waiting. Can I take a detailed message for you?"
She was quiet for a minute as she held the phone away from her ear and raised her brows. I could hear that blowhard Hal London even standing 2 feet away. When he took a breath, she politely managed to get him off the phone.
"Did you get all that?"
she asked me. "I did. Guy's an asshole. I would almost rather represent his cheating bitch of a wife. He keeps me on the phone for an hour every chance he gets. It's his dime, but I still don't want to talk to him. You managed to get him off pretty quick."
"Try pouring on the sweet extra thick. That always throws people off."
"I'll have to keep that in mind." Emery looked at her watch.
"It's almost 4 o'clock. I can't believe the furniture company isn't here yet. I'm sorry. I've been here all day. No problem. I'll just add it to your rent bill. She smiled. Fine, but then I'm charging you for my secretarial services. I'm not cheap. A dirty flash of Emery playing secretary with me as her boss popped into my head, and the words tumbled out before I could stop them. I'd pay a lot for your services. She blushed, but then pushed back. You must be a dick to work for, between your big ego and pervy comments. Good thing you're a lawyer for when you get sued. Did you just call me a dick? She bit her plump lip. I did. I chuckled. You figured that out pretty quick? An alarm on her phone began to buzz. She turned it off. I have a 4 o'clock call with a patient I have to take. I'm going to step outside to take it. That way I don't miss the furniture company either. Why don't you use my office? Might as well get some use out of that desk before they take it back. I'm hard on furniture. I didn't want to ding it and screw up your returning it. More privacy to talk to your patient. I don't want to miss the furniture company. I'll keep a lookout. She hesitated. You don't mind? I shook my head. Nope. Go ahead. I'll play secretary for you now. It didn't take much to convince her. I watched her walk down the hall. Correct that. I watched her ass walk down the hall. When she reached my office, she stopped and looked back over her shoulder, catching me once again. So I winked. I'm nothing if not consistent. It was a little after 4:30 when the furniture company finally showed up. Emery was still in my office, so I knocked on the half-closed door to get her attention. She was writing in a notebook while talking with a headset on. She'd piled her long copper hair in a messy bun on top of her head, and when she looked up, it was the first time I'd seen her wearing glasses. They were dark frames, rectangular in shape, and screamed, "Fuck me, librarian." At least, that's what I heard when I looked at them. I stared for a minute, getting caught in my own fantasy as she finished up her call. Her brows drew down as she said goodbye and slipped off her headset. Is everything okay? Were her eyes always that blue? The black spectacles must have made the color pop even more than her fair skin already had. Yeah. The furniture company is here. She looked at me funny, but then walked out to the lobby. After she signed some paperwork, the workmen followed her to my office. They wrapped the desk in moving blankets and taped them in place. Emery sighed, looking on. It's a beautiful desk. I watched her watching them ready it for moving. Gorgeous. In the last 3 days, she'd realized she'd been swindled for 10 grand, gotten arrested, and found out her dream office belonged to someone else. Yet this was the first time I'd seen her truly saddened. It looked like she'd reached her limit. When I saw her eyes well with tears, I felt it in my chest. It affected me more than I could explain. And obviously it affected more than just my chest. It affected my sanity. Because the bad idea I heard myself suggesting certainly wouldn't have come out of my mouth had I not had a momentary lapse in sanity. Stay. You and your desk should stay. I have plenty of space here. Chapter 7. New Year's Eve, 8 years ago. Some of the best times in life come from bad ideas. The tall blonde with long legs that stretched like a ladder to heaven? She was definitely a bad idea. I'd been keeping tabs on her all night. She'd come with 2 friends. All 3 of them looked barely 18. Some local who was a friend of one of my fraternity brothers had brought them with him. The local had his eye on the blonde, and sometimes his hands, but she seemed to have more interest in getting to know Sigma Alpha guys than him. I should have been studying for the LSAT. Should have left Atlanta and gone home for break like I normally did. But since it was our last semester in the house, all the seniors in my frat decided to stay for the winter break. One party led into another for 10 straight days. And tonight, since it was New Year's Eve, it was an odd crowd. Most of the students were back home, which made room for the locals, and Daisy Duke and her long legs screamed Georgia Peach. Our eyes caught as I took a swig from my beer. She smiled wide, and I had a sudden craving to eat some fruit. She came to me. I didn't even have to get up. Is this seat taken? Momentarily confused, I looked to my right and then my left. I was sitting in a recliner in the corner of the living room, watching the party around me. The closest seat was on the other side of the room. You're welcome to sit anywhere you want. She did just that, plopping her shapely ass down on my lap. I noticed you looking at me. You're a hard person to miss. So are you? You're the best-looking guy at this party? Is that so? I took another draw on my beer, and Little Miss Longlegs took it from my hand when I was done. She brought it to her lips and sucked down half the bottle. Finishing, she made a loud, ah, sound. What's your name, Legs? Alexa, what's yours? Drew. I took the beer back and finished it off. Who's the guy you came here with? Oh, that's just Levi. Not a boyfriend or anything? She shook her head. Nope, he's just Levi. He lives in Douglasville, not too far from me. He's good with cars. Sometimes he fixes mine. Just then, Levi tagged Alexa from the doorway. He didn't look happy to find her sitting on my lap. I lifted my chin in his direction. You sure Levi doesn't think you're more than just friends? Looks like he's a little pissed off right now. She had been sitting with her legs across my lap, but she shifted to face me and swung one over to straddle my hips, effectively blocking my view of her scowling mechanic. Now you can't see him. I clasped my hands behind her back. My view just got a whole lot better. It was less than an hour later when she asked me to show her my room. Of course, I obliged. I'm nothing if not accommodating to beautiful women. I've been living at college going on 4 years now. Some women were straightforward about what they wanted. I was busy and not looking for a relationship, and I appreciated a woman who didn't play games, got straight to the point. Alexa's fingers were at the zipper of my shorts before I closed the bedroom door. I pushed her up against it to block out the party, and it also slammed shut. Two birds, one stone. You're applying to law school next year? She asked as I felt up her tits. It should have set off an alarm since I hadn't mentioned my plans for the future, but she had great tits and killer legs. Those were currently wrapped around my waist. I'd also been drinking since the afternoon. Yeah, I'll probably stay at Emory. My father and grandfather are a legacy. After that, we brought in the new year with a bang. Great memories. Bad idea. Chapter 8. You what? Roman Olivet stared at me like I just told him I kissed Queen Elizabeth. He shook his head. Bad idea, man. I looked down at my scotch, swirling the amber liquid in my glass for a minute before bringing it to my lips. She's going to help me while Tess is out for 3 months in exchange for rent. It'll give her a chance to find a place she can afford and get back on her feet. Roman sucked back his beer. I asked you to rent me space 2 years ago and you told me you couldn't share space with anyone. I can't. This is temporary. He squinted at me. She's hot, isn't she? What's that got to do with anything? You're such a dick. What the hell? Emery said the same thing. Roman's eyebrows jumped. She called you a dick, and you're letting her share office space with you? She must have some ass. I tried to maintain my stoic face, but Roman and I have been friends forever. He caught the slight tick at the corner of my lip. He shook his head and laughed. A good ass is your kryptonite, my friend. To be honest, I was still trying to figure out what the hell had come over me a few hours ago. Not only did I invite this woman, yes, she had a spectacular ass, to move into my office, but I'd had to convince her to take me up on my offer. I repeat, I talked her into moving into my Park Avenue office, the space I loathed sharing with anyone, for free. I tossed back the rest of my scotch and held up my hand to call for a refill. What kind of law does she practice? She's not a lawyer. She's a psychologist. A shrink? You're going to have a bunch of crazy people walking around your office? I hadn't exactly thought of that. What if her patients were psychotic with a variety of multiple personality disorders? Or ex-cons who slit the throats of old ladies but escaped hefty prison sentences because they were insane? I'm going to be murdered because of a great ass. No ass is worth that. Then again, how sane are my own clients? 71-year-old Ferdinand Armonk, who was worth $100 million, was arrested last year for assaulting his 23-year-old bride with his cane because he caught her tongue between his physical therapist's legs. This is the crazy I deal with on an everyday basis already. I shrugged. Her crazy can't be much worse than my crazy. Candace Armonk had her husband arrested for hitting her with a cane and was trying to get half his net worth out of the divorce. Roman wasn't just my best friend. He was also my private investigator and had worked the Armonk case. He'd found an old girl-on-girl porno Candace did at 18 while she still lived in France. It was titled Candy Caned. She got off on women caning her, but apparently her husband giving her one whack that didn't leave a mark was worth 50 mil. When she came to my office with her lawyer for a settlement conference, she'd refused to sit in the conference room with Ferdinand until I put the cane outside of the building. The bartender brought my new drink, and I sipped. Crazy will fit right in. After a morning conference across town, I walked into my office and found Emery pacing back and forth in my spare office, wearing a headset as she talked on the phone. Her back was to me as I turned up the hallway, which gave me a chance to take my time checking her out. She had on a black fitted skirt that hugged her in all the right places, and a white silky blouse. When she heard my footsteps, she turned, and I noticed her feet were bare. The bright red polish on her toes matched her smiling lips. An odd tightness in my chest had me smiling back, while wondering if I needed to take a Prilosec or something. I waved and walked into my office, which was filled with my office furniture, though I hadn't arranged for it to be redelivered yet. 10 minutes later, Emery knocked lightly on my door, even though it was open. Her shoes were back on, red heels covering her red toes. Nice. Good morning. Morning, I nodded. She lifted a pad and took a pencil from behind her ear. You had a busy morning. 6 calls. Jasper Mason, Marlon Appleton, Michael Godman, Kurt Waller, Alan Green, and Arnold Schwartz. I wrote down the messages on a message book I found in your supply closet. Hope you don't mind me helping myself. I waved a hand. By all means, help yourself. I don't know where anything is without Tess around anyway. She ripped the messages from the carbon copy message book and put them on my desk. Here you go. Thank you. By the way, did you have something to do with getting my furniture back from storage?
Oh, yes. I hope you don't mind. The storage company called this morning and wanted to schedule the delivery for today, so I took the first appointment he had available. The contractor was here cleaning up when I got in this morning, and said he was done with anything that would make a mess. He's going to send one of his guys by later to do the last few things, like hang the light switch covers and put the sign back up in the lobby. The boxes with your personal items from your office are on the floor. I was going to go through them and set it up for you, but thought that might be overstepping.
I wouldn't have minded. But thank you. Thanks for taking care of all that this morning. I thought I was walking in to sit on the folding chair and table again. This is a nice surprise.
No problem.
She looked down at her watch.
I have a video conference in a few minutes, but I'm open from 12:30 to 2 today if you want help setting up your office. I can order in and make it a working lunch if you want.
That would be great. I have a call that should end before 12:30.
What do you feel like for lunch?
Surprise me.
Anything I want.
Anything. Unlike you, I'm not picky.
Emery smiled and turned to walk back to her office. I stopped her to ask a question that had been on my mind since dinner with Roman last night.
What kind of psychologist are you? Do you specialize?
I do. I thought I told you. I'm a marriage counselor.
A marriage counselor?
Yes. I work to save troubled marriages.
We definitely didn't discuss that. I'd have remembered, considering I also work with troubled marriages, to dissolve them permanently.
Is it a problem?
I shook my head. Shouldn't be. Famous last words.
Chapter 9. Here are a few more messages. Drew had just hung up the phone after waving me into his office. I set the bag containing our lunch on his desk and handed him the little slips of paper. He shuffled through them quickly and held one up. "If this guy calls back, Jonathan Gates, you have my permission to hang up on him." "Can I call him a name first?" Drew looked amused. "What would you call him?" "That depends. What did he do wrong?"
"He beats his wife."
"Oh, God. Okay." I twisted my lips as I thought of a good name for Mr. Gates. "I'd call him a fucking animal, and then hang up on him." Drew chuckled.
"You don't curse like a New Yorker."
"What do you mean?"
"You pronounce the entire word, F-U-C-K-I-N-G.
"How should I pronounce it?"
"Fucking. Leave off the hard G."
"Fucking," I repeated.
"It sounds stiff. You should practice more so it sounds natural."
I reached into the bag and pulled out the food I'd ordered. With a smile, I offered it to him. "Here's your fucking lunch."
"Nice,"
he smiled.
"Keep it up. You'll sound like Tess in no time."
"Tess?"
"My secretary, who's out because she had back surgery. She's 60 and looks like Mary Poppins, but she swears like a sailor."
"I'll practice some more." I'd ordered us sandwiches from a deli I discovered on my first day of fake tenancy. Since Drew looked like he took care of himself, I picked him out a turkey club on whole wheat with avocado and ordered myself the same, though I usually tended to eat less healthy food. Drew devoured his entire sandwich before I could finish half of mine, and I wasn't a slow eater. Looking at his empty wrapper, I asked, "I take it you liked the sandwich?"
"Went to the gym at 5 a.m. and didn't have time to eat before an early meeting uptown. That was the first thing I'd eaten today."
5 a.m.? You went to the gym at 5 in the morning?"
"I'm an early riser. From the appalled tone in your voice, I take it you're not."
"I try to be."
"How's that working out for you?"
"Not so good," I laughed. "I have trouble falling asleep at night, so mornings are tough."
"Do you exercise?"
"I started taking that Krav Maga a few times a week at night to wear myself out, hoping it would help me sleep. It doesn't really help, but I like it anyway."
"How about those drinks with melatonin in them?"
"Tried them. Nothing."
"Sleeping pills?"
"I wind up groggy for 24 hours after I take anything. Even Tylenol PM wipes me out."
"Prolactin, then?"
"Prolactin? What's that? A vitamin or something?"
"It's a hormone you release after orgasm. Makes you sleepy. Have you tried masturbating right before bed?"
I was mid-swallow and choked on the sandwich bite. Not the sputtering, coughing, it went down the wrong pipe cute kind of choke. No, I choked. Literally. A small chunk of bread lodged in my throat, blocking my airway. In a panic, I stood, knocking the wrapper with the rest of my turkey club and my soda to the floor, and began to point furiously to my throat. Luckily, Drew took the hint. He ran around to my side of the desk and smacked me on the back a few times. When I remained unable to breathe, he wrapped his arms around me from behind and performed the Heimlich. On the second hard thrust, the bread blocking my airway dislodged and flew across his office. Even though the entire episode probably only lasted 15 seconds, I bent and gasped for air as if I'd been deprived for 3 minutes. My heart thundered inside of my chest, the sudden adrenaline surge hitting hard. Drew didn't let go. He kept his arms locked around me tightly, just under my chest, as I heaved in long breaths. Eventually, when my breathing had returned to somewhat normal, he spoke in a low, hesitant voice.
"You okay?"
My voice was scratchy.
"I think so."
His grip around me loosened, but he didn't move away. Instead, he rested his head on top of mine.
"You scared the shit out of me."
I held my throat with one hand. That was a terrifying feeling. I've never actually choked before. For the brief moment of my impending doom, I'd completely forgotten what had made me choke, but it quickly came back to me. "You almost killed me."
killed you. I think your brain was deprived of oxygen. I just saved your life, beautiful. You made me choke. Who brings up masturbating with an almost stranger while eating lunch? An almost stranger. I've seen you in your underwear, bailed you out of prison, and given you a place to park your ass all day long. Pretty sure I'm your best friend in town at this point. I whipped around and stared at him. Maybe I don't need to masturbate anyway. Maybe I have a boyfriend who takes care of those needs. Drew smirked. Not smiled, smirked.
If that's the case, and you're still having trouble sleeping after he takes care of you at night, then dump his ass because he sucks in bed.
And I suppose all of your women are fast asleep after you take care of them.
Damn straight. I'm like a superhero, the prolactinator.
This man had the uncanny ability to make me laugh in the middle of an argument. I snorted as I leaned over to clean up my sandwich from the floor. Okay, prolactinator, how about you use your superpowers to help clean up this mess? After the lunch debacle was straightened, I offered to help Drew unpack his boxes. He had a cordless drill in the first one we opened, and he hung some of his fancy-framed degrees while I unwrapped things and cleaned them off. Our conversation was light and easy until he asked me the question I always dreaded answering.
So you never told me the other day. What brought you to New York?
It's a long story. Drew looked at his watch.
I have 20 minutes until my next consult. Shoot.
For a brief moment, I considered making up a story so I didn't have to tell the truth. But then I figured this guy has seen me at my worst. He helped keep me out of jail, and witnessed firsthand that I could be sold the proverbial Brooklyn Bridge in the form of Park Avenue real estate. So I went with honesty. My first year of college, I wasn't sure what I wanted to major in. I took a psychology 101 class, and the professor was amazing. But he was also a drunk who often missed classes or came in with 10 minutes left in the lecture. He had a TA who was from New York, but working on his doctorate at the University of Oklahoma, and he wound up teaching a lot of the course. The TA was Baldwin. Drew dumped a pile of files into a cabinet and shut it, turning to face me.
So, you moved to New York to be near this Baldwin guy? I thought you said the other day he didn't return the feelings you have.
He doesn't. Baldwin and I became good friends over the next 4 years. He had a girlfriend he lived with, an art history major who modeled on the side. I rolled my eyes, thinking of Meredith. She was so full of herself. He stayed at the college to teach after he finished his doctorate, and then decided to move back to New York to start his own practice and teach here. We kept in touch while I did my graduate work, and he pretty much helped me write my thesis over Skype for a year.
Are we getting to sex or something good in this story soon? Because Baldwin's starting to bore the shit out of me.
Drew was next to me, opening the last box, and I shoved at his arm. You're the one who wanted to hear the story.
I thought it would be more interesting, he teased with a cocky smile.
Anyway, I'll sum up so I don't put you to sleep. Drew interrupted.
No worries. I'm not sleepy. Didn't masturbate this morning.
Thanks for sharing that. Do you want me to finish or not?
Of course. I don't know why, but I'm anxious to hear what's wrong with Baldwin.
Why do you assume something's wrong with him?
Gut feeling.
Well, you're wrong. There's nothing wrong with Baldwin. He's a great guy who's extremely intelligent and cultured. Drew put his hands on his hips and stopped unpacking to give me his full attention.
You said he had a girlfriend for 4 years. I take it they broke up.
Yes, they broke up right before he left to come back to New York.
And he didn't make a move on you, knowing you were in love with him?
How do you know I was in love with him? He looked at me like the answer was obvious.
Were you?
Yes, but
I didn't tell you that. You're easy to read.
I sighed. Why is it so easy for you to see it, but Baldwin seems to be clueless?
He ain't clueless. He knows. But for one reason or another, he isn't letting you know he knows.
It was pretty amazing that Drew had zeroed in on something I'd suspected for a long time. I'd always felt like Baldwin knew about my feelings for him, even though I'd never voiced them. and part of me believed Baldwin returned some of those feelings, even though he'd never acted on them, which is why I'd decided to make the first move, literally, and I moved to New York. Somehow I'd gotten it into my head that since he was single now, the time was right, but all I'd succeeded in doing was torturing myself, as he brought different dates home a few nights a week. I thought if I moved to New York, maybe it would be our time. He's single now. He's not dating anyone seriously, no. Although it seems like he's been through half of the women in New York over the past few months. He comes home with a different woman almost every week. The newest one is Rachel. I rolled my eyes. You live with this guy? No. I sublet the apartment next door to him while his neighbor is teaching in Africa for a year. Let me get this straight. He walks women by the apartment you live in and has never acknowledged that he knows how you feel about him. It's my fault. I've still never told him how I feel. It's not your fault. The guy's an asshole. No, he's not. Open your eyes, Emery. You have no idea what you're talking about. I hope you're right, but I'd put money on not being wrong. I could feel the anger rising in my throat and considered storming back to my office and not helping unpack the rest of his boxes, but I was getting Park Avenue space for free. So instead, I kept quiet and finished what we'd started, until I unwrapped the last item. It was a small picture frame covered in bubble wrap. Drew had left the office to take some boxes out to the garbage compactor in the building's maintenance room. He'd just returned when I unraveled the last layer of tape. The photo was of a beautiful little boy dressed in a hockey uniform. He was probably 6 or 7 years old, and a golden retriever licked his face as he laughed. Smiling, I turned to face Drew. He's adorable. Is this your little boy? He took the photo from my hand. His answer was curt. No. When our eyes met, I was about to ask another question when he cut me off. Thanks for helping me unpack. I have to get ready for an appointment.
Chapter 10. New Year's Eve, 7 years ago. I stood in the little room at the back of the church, staring outside. It was pouring, and the sky was a deep shade of somber gray. Fitting. It was how I felt. Somber. Which was probably not the most encouraging sign that I was making the right choice. Roman opened the door.
There you are. How many people did your father invite? There have to be 400 people filling the place. They started ushering them up to the balcony already.
I have no idea. I didn't ask. The truth was, there was very little I'd asked about regarding the wedding. I'd chalked my lack of interest up to being busy studying in law school, but lately I'd realized it was more than that. I wasn't excited to be getting married. Roman stood next to me and joined my staring out the window. He reached into the inside pocket of his tuxedo and pulled out a flask, offering it to me first. I took it because I needed it.
"Car is in the back if you want to bail," he said.
I sidelong glanced at him as I sucked a double shot of whiskey out of the flask.
"I couldn't do that to her. She's having my baby, man."
"She's going to be having your baby whether she likes it or not in 2 months."
"I know, but it's the right thing to do."
"Fuck the right thing." I handed the flask back to my best man with a smirk.
"You know you're in a church."
He drank from the flask.
"I'm going to hell already. What's the difference?"
I laughed. At 24, my best friend had already been politely asked to leave the NYPD. Asked was a polite way to say, quit or we fire you. He wasn't exactly an angel.
"I care about Alexa. We'll make it work."
"I haven't heard the word love yet. Would you be marrying her if you hadn't knocked her up like an idiot after only a few months of hooking up?" I didn't respond.
"That's what I thought. People can have a kid and not be married. It's not 1960 anymore, Mr. Cleaver."
"We'll make it work." Roman slapped me on the back.
"Your life. But keys are in my pocket if you change your mind."
"Thanks, man."
Chapter 11. Just because you're physically thousands of miles away doesn't mean your hearts are. You should each take the time to let the other know you're thinking of them. Let me ask you, Jeff. You mentioned that you thought of Cammie today when you went for a run because you passed a lingerie store named Cammie Souls. Had you mentioned that to Cammie before our therapy session today? Perhaps when she brought up, she feels as if you don't give her any thought? The screen on my 42-inch monitor was split. A video feed of Jeff Scott on the left, and a video feed of Cammie Scott on the right. The two had been married less than a year when Jeff was transferred to the West Coast. Considering he was their only income, with Cammie in her second year of a dental residency, it left him little choice but to relocate until he was able to find a new job closer to their home in Connecticut. "No, I hadn't mentioned it to her before today," Jeff said. "I'm busy. She knows I think about her." His face froze on my screen for a few seconds, even though his voice kept going. He was mid-speaking, and the stilled video had caught him in an odd frame. One eye was fully closed, and I could only see white on the other half-closed eye. His mouth was open, and his tongue looked stained with coffee. I needed to find better video software for my counseling sessions. God knows what I look like on their screens at the moment. Our 45-minute couples therapy session was almost up. This week, I'd like to do an exercise. At least once a day, when something reminds you of each other, let the other person know at that moment. If you're out for a jog and see something, maybe snap a picture and text it. Cammie, if a patient comes in with a cold and sneezes a lot, reminding you of Jeff's propensity to sneeze 6 to 8 times in a row, let him know. These little things can go a long way in reminding each other that your heart is never far, even if there are miles between you. Distance is only a test to see how far love travels. I heard what sounded like a snicker outside my partially closed door. So after my session ended, I was curious and went to find Drew. He stood in the copy room, which was next to the office I was using, making photocopies. "Did you just say something to me?" I asked, giving him the benefit of the doubt. "Nope. My father always taught me that if I had nothing nice to say to a woman, I should keep it to myself." I hadn't been imagining it. "You were eavesdropping on my counseling session. You laughed at the advice I gave my clients, didn't you?" Drew's eyes narrowed. "I wasn't eavesdropping. You had your door open, and you're loud on the phone. You do know you don't need to yell for the person on the other end of a video conference to hear you, right?"
"I wasn't yelling."
Drew finished making his copies, slipping a pile of papers from the feeder.
"Whatever. But you might want to shut your door if you don't want me overhearing your bad advice."
My eyes grew to saucers.
"Bad advice? What are you talking about? I'm a licensed psychologist who did her dissertation on overcoming barriers in relationships by opening the lines of communication in couples therapy."
Drew snickered. "Again."
"You're the expert, then. I'll leave you to it."
He walked back to his office. He had no clue what he was talking about. My advice was solid, based on years of studying couples who wanted to work things out. I couldn't help myself. I followed him, standing at his doorway.
"And what advice would you give a couple forced to endure a long-distance relationship?"
"I'd give them more realistic advice than, 'Distance is only a test to see how far love travels.' That's a load of shit. Where'd you read that one? A Hallmark card?"
My eyes bulged.
"And what is your idea of realistic advice?"
"Simple. Hire a good divorce attorney. Long-distance relationships do not work."
"I take it you had one and it burned you, so you assume everyone else is going to be burned?"
"Not at all. I've never had a long-distance relationship. You know why? They don't work. And I know this from experience. What experience do you have in long-distance relationships?"
"I've studied couples for years. I think I have more experience than you do on the subject."
"Is that so?"
Drew went to his file cabinet and pulled out a large, rubber-banded, expandable file. He slammed it down on his desk.
"Morrison. Happily married 14 years. Divorced 2 years ago. 3 years before the divorce, Dan Morrison took a job as a regional traveling salesman. More money. His wife wouldn't have to work anymore. four nights a week on the road, yet Dan never missed date night with his wife on Fridays or driving 40 miles on Sundays, his day off, to give his elderly father-in-law a bath. But you know what he missed? Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, when Mrs. Morrison was fucking her tennis instructor, Lair. When I continued to glare at him, he opened another drawer and took out a second file, slapping it down on top of the Morrison file. Loring, happily married 6 years, when his office relocated from New York to New Jersey. 80 miles, not too far. But Al Loring worked 16 hours a day a few days a week. His bitch of a wife, Mitzi, was a light sleeper, so he would spend the nights he worked too late on the couch at his office, not wanting to wake his princess bride. Came home one night that he was supposed to crash at the office because he missed Mitzi. Found his wife on all fours in their bed, with his neighbor balls deep inside of her. Neighbor has his dog and his wife now, and Al turned into an alcoholic and lost his job in New Jersey. He reached into the same drawer and took out yet another file. McDune, married 6 years. Erin went to live in Dublin temporarily to take care of her mother who became depressed after the death of her father. Divorced Liam for a guy who looks like a leprechaun because she found her soulmate back in the motherland. So much for long distance to nurse your mother's soul. Drew reached down to the bottom cabinet and opened it. This time, I stopped him. Should you even be telling me any of this? Ever hear of attorney-client privilege? I changed the names to protect the not-so-fucking-innocent. Believe it or not, unlike my client's spouses, I have some ethics. He pointed to the cabinet.
Want to hear more? I think you'll really like Lieutenant O'Connor's story. It's a real tearjerker. Wife was screwing his brother while he was off in Iraq, and she... I cut him off again. I get your point. But what you're missing is that maybe these divorces wouldn't have happened if the couples had sought counseling. You see people when they're at their worst. People who gave up instead of fighting for their marriage. Drew stared at me. You really believe all marriages can be saved? I thought about the question for a minute before answering. Not all. But I think most can be saved, yes. Opening the lines of communication can fix a lot of things. Drew shook his head. That's naive. I also have some real estate on Park Avenue you can rent for $2,000 a month. Screw you, I hissed, and stormed back to my office. I kept my office door shut the rest of the afternoon. A knock that came at almost 7 p.m. startled me as I worked on transcribing my chicken scratch notes from today's counseling sessions. I kept an e-case file for each patient. Come in. The door opened, but only slightly, just enough to fit an arm through, which is exactly what happened. Drew's arm, waving something white around. What is he waving? Are those underwear? I'd been carrying around a full load of angry all afternoon, after our heated argument, and it was starting to weigh me down. His gesture brought some much-needed levity. Come in, I said again. He pushed the door open a few more inches. This time his head joined his white flag-waving arm. You're not still pissed and planning to use your mad Krav Maga skills on me, are you? I laughed. I should. You deserve a good ass-whipping. But I'll hold back. Drew smiled and opened the door the rest of the way, staying in the doorway. I guess I owe you an apology for some things I said today. I sat back in my chair. You do. He hung his head. The action reminded me of a little boy who'd given his dog a bath in red paint. It was cute. He was cute. But I was going to make him grovel anyway. His head was still slightly bowed as he looked up at me from beneath his dark lashes. I'm sorry for today. What exactly are you sorry for? He dropped his head back down. You're going to make this difficult, aren't you? Yep. Fine. I'm sorry for calling you naive. Anything else? I watched his face as the wheels spun in his head. For listening to your conversation with your client. Is that it? Is there supposed to be more? He looked a little nervous for a second. There's more. After 30 more seconds of thought, he snapped his fingers as if he was proud of himself. I'm sorry for looking at your ass. My brows drew down. When did you look at my ass? He shrugged. every chance I get. I couldn't help but laugh. Apology accepted. His shoulders dropped a bit, and he looked relieved. The man had a tough exterior, but sometimes the ones who'd had it rough wore the thickest armor. How about I buy you a burger at Joey's for dinner to make it up to you? He winked. I'll buy the biggest one they have so you can get real full and take your skirt off for me again. Chapter 12. Can I ask you something personal? No. Drew's response was quick. No? I crinkled up my face, confused. You know, usually when two people are sitting around talking and eating, and one of them asks the other if they can ask something personal, the other generally says yes. It's polite. I have a rule. Whenever someone asks if they can ask something, I say no. Why? Because if you have to ask if you can ask, it's probably something I don't want to answer anyway. But how do you know if you don't even hear the question? Drew sat back in his chair. What's your question, Emery? Well, now I feel like I shouldn't ask it. He shrugged and finished off the last of his beer. Okay, so don't. Did something happen to you that made you bitter about relationships? Thought you didn't feel like you should ask. I changed my mind. You're kind of a pain in the ass. You know that, right? And you're kind of a bitter jerk, so I'm curious what made you that way. Drew tried to hide it, but I saw the corner of his lip twitch toward a smile. I'll tell you why I'm a bitter jerk, if you tell me why you're a pain in the ass. But I don't think I'm a pain in the ass. Maybe you should see a therapist, help you figure that shit out. I crumpled up my napkin and threw it at his face. It hit him square in the nose. Very mature, he said. I don't think I'm a pain in the ass in general. I think you just bring out the ass in me. He smirked. It's a nice ass to bring out. Speaking of which, if you're full, I could help you unzip to get comfortable. Jesus, he really was a smartass. I'm never going to live down the night we met, am I? Not a chance. I sipped my Merlot, not wanting to waste it, but I was so full from the humongous burger Drew had ordered me. Honestly, I couldn't wait to get home and unzip my skirt, although I wasn't about to admit that to Drew. So, back to my original question. Why are you so bitter about relationships? I deal with divorces all day long. It's a little hard to have a positive outlook when all you see is cheating, lying, stealing, and people who started out in love getting off on hurting each other. So it's because of your line of work. You didn't have a bad relationship that soured you? Drew stared at me for a while. His thumb went to rub at the center of his full bottom lip as he deliberated over his answer, and my eyes followed. Damn, he has great lips. I bet they would devour my mouth. Luckily, the waitress came and interrupted my ogling. Can I get you anything else? She asked. Drew looked to me. Some dessert or anything? I'm too full, he answered the waitress. Just the check, thank you. She took our plates, and when she left, there was a minute of awkward silence. He still hadn't answered my question, and I thought maybe he was going to try to change the subject again. I was surprised when he answered. I'm divorced. Marriage lasted 5 years. Wow, I'm sorry. Not your fault. Even though I could tell it took a lot of effort to share that much, and I knew I should probably leave well enough alone, I couldn't help myself. Did you have a long-distance relationship? Not in a physical sense, no. That bitterness today was purely from my experience in divorces. The number one reason people wind up in my office is they don't spend time together. I'll admit, a lot of my counseling cases are similar. It's not always a long-distance relationship like the one you heard me talking about today, but in the majority of my counseling, the couples don't spend time together. They're either working a lot and don't make time for each other, or they're still hanging on to the separate lives they had before they were married. I bet our cases are very similar. Come to think of it, maybe you can hand out my business cards for when your counseling doesn't work. My eyes widened. You've got to be joking. A slow smile spread across his face as he brought his beer to his lips. I am. The waitress returned with the check,
and Drew took out his wallet. I went to take out mine, and he stopped me. Dinner's on me. It's my apology offering for being a dick today, remember? Well, thank you. I hope you're a dick often, I choked. I have 10 grand to save up again. Drew stood and walked around to my chair, pulling it out as I stood. Oh, that won't be a problem. I'm pretty much a dick every day. The lock on my apartment door was tricky. I had to wiggle it around and pull the key in and out a few times before finding the exact right spot that allowed me to turn the bolt. Baldwin must have heard my keys jingling. His apartment door, next to mine, opened. Hey, I knocked earlier to see if you wanted to grab some dinner, but you weren't home yet.
Oh, I had dinner with Drew.
Baldwin took the keys from my hand. Somehow he got the lock on the first try every time. The door opened, and he followed me inside.
Drew?
He's the real tenant in the office I thought I rented. The one who's letting me stay for a few months? Baldwin nodded.
You're dating him now, too?
I snorted. No. He was a jerk today and made it up to me with dinner.
Why was he a jerk?
I went into my bedroom to change and continued our conversation through the partially closed door. I guess he really wasn't a jerk. We just have very different opinions on counseling relationships. He overheard me on a call and gave me his thoughts on how my advice to my patients would work out. After I'd slipped into some sweats and a t-shirt, I went out to the living room. Baldwin was sitting where he always sat when we hung out. I took the couch, and he sat on the oversized leather chair. Sometimes it made me feel like his patient.
He shouldn't be listening to your counseling sessions. They're confidential.
It was my fault. I tend to yell when I'm on those video conferences, and I left my door open.
Maybe I should stop by the office.
For what?
I don't know. Check things out.
Baldwin was being sweet. Hearing that someone had been a jerk to me brought out his protective side, although the thought of Baldwin versus Drew was actually pretty comical. The two were polar opposites. Baldwin was thin, well-mannered, average height, and looked every bit the professor he was. He even wore bow ties and glasses that made him appear older than his 35 years. Drew was 29, tall, broad, and thick. He also cursed whenever it suited him, regardless of who was around. Even though I would never describe Drew as well-mannered like Baldwin, there was something very chivalrous about him beneath the rough exterior. I don't think that's necessary. I'm fine. He's just a little jagged around the edges, is all. Funny, I hadn't thought of it until now. His last name is Jagger. Jagged. Sort of fitting. Knowing Baldwin liked a late evening glass of wine, I walked to the kitchen and opened the fridge, taking out the bottle I kept for him before he'd even responded to my question.
Would you like a glass of wine?
Yes, thank you. I poured it and grabbed myself a water. As I handed it to him, he said,
You're not joining me?
I plopped down on the couch. I'm too full. I ate a huge burger for dinner. Drew ordered me a double cheeseburger deluxe.
He ordered for you? You're such a picky eater.
He knew I liked burgers. I shrugged. Untwisting the cap from my water, I asked, What did you wind up eating?
I had sushi from Zen's delivered.
I scrunched my nose. Glad I missed that.
I would have ordered something different if we were eating together.
Baldwin always deferred to me for ordering. It was one of the things I loved about him. Sushi seemed to be his go-to meal for dates, so it wasn't like he was deprived of his favorites. No date tonight? I asked. Normally I avoided the topic of his love life. It was difficult to see him with women, and hearing about them in any detail would kill me. But tonight I felt less hesitant for some reason.
Papers to grade. You would have appreciated the answer I received from a female student.
What was the question?
I asked them to give me a sound argument that Freud's psychoanalysis techniques were flawed. We've spent the last 3 weeks studying Grunbaum and Kolbe, so it should have been an easy question.
Yes, I agree. What did you get as an answer?
Ms. Balick wrote, Freud was a man.
I laughed. I think that might be a valid argument. You should probably give her some points for that.
Cute, but I don't think so.
You were always a tough grader.
I always gave you good grades.
I earned them. Which was true, but it got me thinking. Have you ever given anyone points they didn't deserve? Maybe because they were pretty, or you felt bad for them?